It is 7:01 p.m. in the evening here at KMUD Studios in Garberville. KMUD Garberville 91.1 and HD1. KMUN 498-7796. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed throughout the broadcast day are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, or underwriters.
I don't watch them die. Because the critters cannot speak, we think it ain't so bad. My father brought home steak to eat and said that's all we had. But then one day I learned the trick which broke me aching heart. The yummy meats that are a treat to animals apart. It's super gallus, dead and bloody brutal massacres. Even when the screams they make are often quite atrocious. When their pain is bad enough, they even I traveled all around the world and everywhere I go, this bloody killing practice is a given, don't you know?
When to that video or hear it again, treespiritproject.com/vegan/vegan/. And we are here with the writer of that song. And tell me how to say your name again, Jack. I apologize.
Jack.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. It's Jack.
Oh, you mean the other one, that other thing behind my name. That's Gescheit.
Gescheit.
It's a German word. It means, in German, it means smart. And ironically, I mean, how perfect, but Jack in German, of course, everyone knows means not.
Oh, well, my name in German means maker of wine barrels, so I think you got me beat.
We go into business together, we can have smart wine barrels.
So you wrote this song, Jack.
Yes, I wrote the song. I did not write the music, nor did I sing it.
We all recognize the tune. You did a great job there. I cannot wait. I'm going to pull this up for you now. And we will be back momentarily with our guests. So please enjoy this short video introducing CAFO farming and the idea of agriculture on our planet today.
People say we have a population crisis, and we do, but it's not up.
Cause more climate breakdown than all our planes, trains, trucks, cars, and ships put together. The extreme climate events of the past few years, the heat dome over North America, which cooked the fruit on the trees and roasted the shellfish on the rocks, the wildfires in California and Australia, the great heat waves in the Arctic and Antarctica, the floods in Europe, in China, in South Africa. These look to me like the flickering of the Earth's systems. The world could be about to flip out of its current stable state. The state which is perfectly suited to the flourishing of life.
We're old enough to remember a man named Tom Lehrer, who was an MIT math professor. Harvard. He went to Harvard and taught at MIT. But anyway, a parody lyricist of the ilk of Randy Rainbow these days. So being an activist, as I'm excited to hear who Samantha is. I think I know who she is, but I'm not sure. But humor and music are wonderful ways to drive home messages that are difficult to hear and around.
In Sonoma County, because we have passionate voters seeing how this project turns around.
Wonderful. Thank you. So Measure J is in Sonoma County. Us all. Is there more? If you're using internet to listen to the radio right now, if you have an old school boombox, it's time to pull. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to discuss tonight mostly CAFO farming, but let's also just talk about what kind of things might make the world a better place just in general. And part of the reason we asked the two of you here is because you do have interesting information that we don't hear every single day, especially in advertising and things like that. So I'm just going to open up the floor, and I don't know, what would you guys like to start with talking about? Jack, would you like to begin?
Oh, sure. You pulled it out of me. And I kept standing 10 years on stage and saying, oh, trees are so important, we mustn't cut down trees, and they sequester carbon, and they're beautiful, and blah, 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 blah. I didn't know that the number one tree, really cruel, so cruel that if you watch a slaughterhouse kill floor on video for 10 seconds, the average person, including hunters, are revulsed. And that is necessary in order to feed the number of humans that are addicted to meat like I was for over 50 years. So I don't criticize people that eat meat. I understand it. It's the conditioning. It's the air we breathe and the food we eat that, you know, our loving parents and grandparents and great-grandparents gave us. But it is, as George Monbiot said, very pointedly, it's destroying the planet. Sorry, folks, but that is the truth. And for which I make no apologies, because I know an activist named Leah might be listening in, and she always gets pissed at me when I'm nice guy and apologize for things like telling the truth about animal ag.
Oh, well, that's part of the reason we asked you on, right? Is so you'll tell us the truth. And
yeah, I also want to give a little time to Samantha, because I can go on as we activists can.
Of course. I love this train of thought in this conversation that we're having right now, especially about just being dedicated to the truth and being really driven to do something, even though it might be going against your community, it might be going against your family. When you find out the information, and facts is such a strained word these days, it covers a lot of things. But when you ultimately end up finding out the statistics and finding out all of the different trade-offs that we make to include animal products in our diet, it truly is like looking for the right way to do the wrong thing. And I think that we as activists and just as participatory citizens, we have gone so far past the threshold of acceptability for what we're doing to the planet and for what we're doing to animals, that we can no longer look for the right way to do the wrong thing. We simply have to look for the right way to do the right thing all the time. And we, even though it is very difficult, and we're standing here as truth tellers together, it is very difficult to go against our families and our culture, but it's something that we need to start doing, which is one of the reasons why I ended up bringing Measure J to the table, because I actually grew up on my grandfather's dairy farm. And so I had a really great insight of what farming was in Sonoma County in the 90s and the early aughts. And it simply isn't that way anymore, which is one of the reasons why I have gone against my family culture to try and save the small farms.
When you say, Samantha, that it's not what it used to be like 20 years ago, are you? Can you tell us a little more about what the changes have been a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the number one cause of the loss of small farms is monopolization. And people, especially industry groups, really like to pretend that the loss of small farms is due to industry regulation or somehow due to losing a share of the market for plant-based items or what has it. But in the 90s, we saw an incredible consolidation of egg farms, specifically in Sonoma County, and Petaluma is known as the egg basket of California. So we saw an incredible consolidation of farms then, before Prop 12, before Prop 2, before any of these other things. And it was specifically and exclusively due to the monopolization of farming that we see through corporations like Sunrise Farms, which can some of their facilities have up to 500,000 birds in each shed. Yes, 500,000 birds crammed into one shed, and they never, ever see the light of day. And that's the reality of farming now in Sonoma County. So that's one of the reasons why I have brought Measure J. I know that I'm saying that a lot, but I'm very, very passionate about demonopolizing farming, especially here in Sonoma County, where it would be so easy for us to give a fair share of the market back to small farmers.
I have a question that kind of pulls us back to the last show. So when we're talking specifically about Measure J, they're talking about the measure would tell 24, 21, something like that, farms in Sonoma that they need to downsize within 3 years or close down. Am I accurate on that?
Yep, 21 farms would need to downsize to appropriate levels because the levels that they're operating at, like I said, 500,000 chickens is outlandish.
I'm sorry, that's obscene. That's a lot. That's yes. Nobody's happy that close together. I can't imagine it. But my question is just, and I'm going to give the floor back to you guys. My question is, if there was a farm, naming no names, that was like, 10, 20, 100 cows too many, couldn't they just get rid of that 100 extra cows and then they wouldn't be considered a CAFO and they could stay open as a farm, as a family farm? Isn't that a fact?
Yep, that is 100% a fact. We actually do have several farms here in Sonoma County that could meet that threshold if they gave up under three digits of cows. So,
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
So I want to throw something into the mix here if I can.
Yeah,
I guess it would be a stick of dynamite. So
we're ready. That's why we brought you.
Yeah, thanks. And I have such a nice radio voice. How could I possibly be upsetting to the audience? So I'm not a representative of Measure J. So Samantha is that. I'm a vegan activist, an environmental activist. I've got a Zoom screen here with forest behind me. But there's no distinction between the size of a farm, small or large, or giant, or CAFO, or not CAFO, or backyard. Someone seems to be gritting her teeth at the moment, because they all kill animals for human consumption, which is, get this, an unnecessary product. For many people, it's unhealthy. Certainly milk is inarguably unhealthy and not needed, hence lactose intolerance that I was taught to make fun of when I grew up in New York State in the 1960s and 70s. But it's going to kill the animals. And CAFOs came into existence, in my humble opinion, because there's no other way to raise enough animals to slaughter to feed people. Okay, so again, I don't represent Measure J. Measure J is doing its thing, and you know, I support the measure. Great, I hope it passes. And it does start a conversation, which must happen. So I'm guessing we're in agreement about these conversations, as Samantha said wisely, about truth and facts. So for me, if 340 million Americans in this country continue to eat three meals a day with a lot of animal products, it's not sustainable. It doesn't matter whether we make them on small farms or CAFOs. And the regenerative, last stick of dynamite I'll throw in here, is regenerative ranching. And by the way, I say this as an ex-ad man that worked for J. Walter Thompson, sister to the Hill & Knowlton giant public relations firms that works for some of these dodos, meaning creatures that are going extinct, which is to say cattle ranches specifically, the blight on the planet. Their way to fight back about these facts and truths we're talking about in this show is to say, no. Regenerative ranching will cure it all. Just move the cattle around on more land, and now everything is fine. The manure goes away. The massive water consumption magically goes away. And of course, let's never mention methane. Let's just talk about carbon sequestration, because we've helped 20 to 30% reduce carbon, but don't talk about all the other issues I just brought up, and I want to repeat them, and then I'll stop, which is methane from cows is actually increased with the roughage of pasture-raised cows. Water consumption increases with the longer life of a loving family farm petted cow, which is very sweet to feed your neighbors, but it's not going to feed America. And that's what I'm concerned about. I'm not focused on someone who has two cows in their backyard. That's another issue for me. It's feeding America. And there's this fantasy that people buy into in all the counties. I'm in Marin, where it's like, well, I just get the small good ones because I'm rich and I can afford it. It's not scalable. It's irrelevant, and you're pretending if all of it isn't so brutal that no one wants to talk about how the sausage is made, because when you see it for yourself or in a video of it, it's revolting. That's how cruel it is, folks. So enjoy, and you're welcome for opening up the conversation.
Here's a question. The Carolinas have been in the news lately with all the flooding going on. Can someone briefly talk about Proposition 12 and here in California and how that affects the farms in the Carolinas?
Yeah. Yes, I would. Absolutely. Fantastic question. And this, the one reason why I wanted to bring, and I'm so sorry, this does have a point. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring Measure J to Sonoma County is that it uses the EPA's concentrated animal feeding operation definition word for word. And so the EPA back in 2006 was sued by the National Pork Producers Council, who are an enormous donor to the opposition on a Measure J campaign. In 2006, the EPA was sued by the National Pork Producers Council in the federal government for collecting data on hog farms that had polluted the Mississippi River during Katrina and during the storm surge, when all of the water washed out all of these hog farms. And we saw just a couple years ago with another hurricane that ended up hitting the Carolinas, we had the exact same thing. So in 2006, the EPA actually lost that lawsuit against the National Pork Producers Council. And so they were no longer able to track the factory farms, the CAFOs, that are all on every waterway throughout the entire United States. So the National Pork Producers Council is this insane lobbying group that has constantly gone after activists and constantly gone after environmentalists, just trying to expose, not even trying to litigate, but simply trying to expose the pollution that is caused by storm surges and by flooding. So the fact that we're seeing this again real time, I know with 100% certainty that there are hog farms that are in Helene's storm surge path that have flooded. It's likely that the majority of those hogs have died because there's no way for farmers to evacuate them from their farms. And they actually get reimbursed through the USDA, regardless of whether or not they've made attempts to remove their animals from those farms. But this particular situation that we have here with the storm surges, to recover the operations or AFOs, or concentrated animal feeding operations, which are CAFOs. Really definitely stay tuned about the storm surges that are happening in the Carolinas right now, and the storm surges that are also happening in northern Tennessee. We are going to see a lot of information come out through watchdog groups about the intensive farming that's taking place right next to these rivers that are so in danger of flooding.
Can someone tell us about the average life in a gestation crate?
I am happy to do that. Jack, do you want to jump in? Oh, you're muted, Jack. Jack, you're muted.
Yeah, you're on mute, Jack.
Sorry.
That's okay. There you go.
Thank you. We're up with my husband. So it was, by all intents and purposes, the type of pig farm that you hear about in your dreams. The person that's selling you, you know, very bespoke products that are individualized. It turned out that it wasn't enough for me. There was the pigsty was on the inside of this building, and directly outside of this building was the guard dogs, because people would come in and try and steal the piglets. I would go in and I would clean the pig stalls and I would rub their bellies. They would roll over for me. It was an entirely dog-like experience. And then I would go out to feed the dogs and they would roll over. I would rub their bellies, all of these types of things. I truly made the connection in that moment that the only difference between these two types of animals was how I saw them. So when you are thinking about something like a gestation crate, you have to truly, in order to understand what it's like, put yourself in that position. I currently am undergoing COVID, so I have been isolating and just trying to stick to my room. I live with my mother, fortunately. And so I have just been trying to stick to my room, trying to really self-isolate, and you get stuck in bed. And so I think to myself, you know, when I'm just mentally stuck in bed, sitting on my phone, can't leave my room, I think about what it would be like to really legitimately be stuck lying down for months and months at a time. And you can talk to people who are disabled, who babies, they're stuck in these small cement crates. They might also, you know, chew your nipples off, which is something that we see in a lot of mother pigs, that the babies are undergoing as much.
You can always find us live and archive any of our shows on KMUD.org. It is now 7:30, and because this is the Friday Night Talk, we will now take calls from those listening who have questions for our guest tonight or would like to chime in on the topic of CAFO farming, factory farming, or veganism as a remedy for global warming. Jack, do you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit more about that?
Very much. Very much. Yeah. Forests are being cut down across the globe, and why the climate crisis is upon us, in large part because of so-called animal ag, which is cattle farming, dead zone. At last, animal suffering and death. And if you do nothing else from this show, as far as Jack Gesheit Tree Spirit Project goes, watch either the movie or The Apex Predator on the species, on the planet. And then the other one is Earthlings, which is an earlier film, but same idea. It shows humankind's treatment of animals. And the tragic irony is, if you ask anybody, do you like animals? People say, yeah, animals are fine. Or more likely, oh my gosh, I love animals. I, Jack, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, said I loved animals and I ate them because I didn't know the truth. And then the ugly truth is that I will admit, I didn't want to know. I would see a flyer from In Defense of Animals or PETA or one of the, but killing ourselves in the process. And the simple remedy is do what I'm guessing, contribution you can make to the planet, to the welfare of the human species, if you prefer humans. And it's just 3 meals a day. Just eat something else. In the supermarkets, you can choose another product instead of choosing the cow's milk, which is probably the cruelest product. Sorry, vegetarians for the 70s who are 30 years in advance of me. Just choose the, I like oat milk. It's probably the least, well, I like it, and it's low water impact compared to, say, other milks. So there you go. Thanks for letting me go on about that. And I'm cutting it short because there's so much more to say on this topic.
Jack, I love that you're reminding all of us that we vote with our dollar. And when we walk into a grocery store, we have a million choices. And even low-income people can afford to choose between dairy and non-dairy milks. I personally like coconut better than oat.
Fine. Yeah, it's fine. I mean, you know, and people say, oh, we're cutting down coconut trees or palm oil trees, and all that stuff is legitimate. But
it is.
The big one is get off cows and I would say pigs and chickens, of course, you know, and turkeys and Thanksgiving. I'm so grateful for my life. I'm going to slaughter millions of turkeys. And, you know, again,
all on the same day, everybody kill a turkey.
Right. And the thing that I remember, I wasn't even vegetarian. My brother was a 20-year vegetarian because, of course, he moved to San Francisco first. He'd come back to New York for Thanksgiving. And I'm like, Andy, come on. You won't have a turkey? Like, what's wrong with you? So I get it. That's the norm. The vegans are the crazy ones. But the truth is the vegans are the sane ones who are willing to step up and speak the truth, like speaking against slavery in the 1700s. We have to take callers, I understand.
Yeah, we do have a call. I'm going to try to pull it up here, and I want to remind folks, I'm kind of new at this. I'm going to do my best, and I think you are on the air. Go ahead, caller.
Oh, I
can
hear,
you please turn off?
Am I live right now?
You are, but please turn off your radio before you keep talking, because we can hear ourselves echoing behind you.
Yeah, I got it. I just did.
Thank you.
All right. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I just want to say how much I appreciate you having this subject broadcast. I don't know to how many people, but like
Jack, we don't know either.
Said, it is the most important issue of our time. What we do to animals behind closed doors that nobody wants to talk about is beyond cruel. It's horrific. And again, we all need to be willing to face it and to really know what really goes on for meat, flesh, dairy, eggs to get to our plates. No amount of organic, small, local, grass-fed, free-range, cage-free makes any kind of difference for the animal. Those are humane washing terms. We need to start really looking at the truth. I highly recommend anyone right now on YouTube, 5 minutes of your time, go to Dairy is Scary. Just watch Dairy is Scary on YouTube. Start looking into the truth. Veganism is a moral urgency. If that was your dog in that slaughterhouse, if that was you, how urgently would you want people to speak up for you? And not just for you, for the animals, but for the entire planet. We've got to do something, and we've got to face the truth. So thank you so much, everybody who's on the show and to the station for broadcasting this.
Thank you, caller. I want to remind folks that that video and many, many other links are on the Tree Spirit Project website that Jack has, treespiritproject.com. I'm amazed at how much information is on this website, Jack. And I think you mentioned to me earlier today that there are 20 years into this. Am I right?
Yes, and I hope it's okay. I think I recognize the voice of that caller. So she is actually, I'm pretty sure, the farmed animal campaigner for In Defense of Animals, IDAUSA.org, and they're really stepping up to the plate. They've supported my work. I've also been one of the activists on the ground trying to prevent tule elk from dying inside Point Reyes National Seashore, which has made the news because so many activists got involved in that campaign. It does take a large group or a small group of committed individuals, thank you, Margaret Mead, to then activate a larger group of citizens and then change the narrative and actually, in that case, have a successful story where they're reversing a 45-year federal policy and taking down an 8-foot barrier fence, which exists because guess why? Cattle ranching. And the cattle ranchers are now screaming bloody murder and we're going to put us out of business. But they were paid millions of dollars decades ago to leave Point Reyes Seashore. They took the money and then didn't leave. They were negged on the deal and now we're trying to get more money and more digging in their their cowboy boot heels to say, oh, you're going to put us out of business. You were paid money, guys. You took it. That was the deal. It's just, and of course, it's the major source of pollution in the park. Land pollution, water contamination from excessive amounts of manure with thousands of cows, and of course, air pollution from methane, which, you know, they'll talk about methane digesters and feeding them seaweed and other, you know, humane washing stuff and greenwashing stuff too, which doesn't offset the most inefficient way to feed human beings, which is by pushing food through animals to get, even Mombio used the word protein, and that drives me nuts. I get plenty of protein. No one in this country has kwashiorkor. No one even knows that word. And that's specifically a Ghanaian word that means protein deficiency.
I've never heard that word in my life.
Yeah, you know what's a superfood, folks? You got superfood you got to buy, you know, powdered for 50 bucks an ounce. It's called beans. Get a can of beans at Trader Joe's for $1.09, and you get tons of protein, and I eat it with brown rice or potatoes. It's not sexy, but it's nutritious, filling, delicious if you know how to cook, inexpensive, and oh, by the way, little ancillary benefit, you don't have to cook the planet.
I grew my own beans this year. I'm really proud of that. First time ever. Anyway, irrelevant. I have another caller. I'm going to go ahead and pull them up if that's all right. Here we are. Caller, you are on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. You've got two wonderful guests there with you tonight, Jack and Samantha. Samantha, I have a quick question for you. I think I had heard that you and your husband or in your family, you did some kind of a farm conversion. Did you go from a dairy farm or an animal producing farm to a plant farm? And I'm wondering if you guys, if that was the case, if you guys can talk a little bit for maybe some of your other listeners who may be producing animals, what actually happens when we do transformation. So that would be my question. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. That's a cool question. Looking forward to it. Go ahead, Samantha.
That is a fantastic question. Thank you so much. I personally did not undergo a farm transition. I grew up on my grandfather's dairy farm, and I stayed in the farming community my whole entire life, which led me to ultimately pig farming in Europe. The way that my grandfather transitioned his farm is not necessarily the way that everyone is going to be able to go. But because he lived in such a fantastic area, he ended up actually selling to a group that does, let me see if I can get this right. They do therapy almost for mentally disabled children through horseback riding. So I don't really know necessarily what that's called. Unfortunately, I did grow up riding horses, but that was never really something that I was involved in. And so that isn't necessarily a transition in farming. That's a transition in land use. Although horses, you know, consume an enormous amount of alfalfa, it's not nearly as much as what the dairy cows are consuming here in California. There are many programs that are working with farmers to transition their facilities. There is an amazing group of people led by Renee King in Texas, and she helps people to transition onto other types of agriculture. Like there was a chicken farm in Texas that transitioned into a mushroom farm. And even in Humboldt County, there was a dairy that's right on the 101. I believe it's just south of Fortuna that used to be a dairy full time, but now they grow quinoa part of the year. And so that I thought that was absolutely perfect. It was basically a one for one quote. I know that Jack is going to be mad, a protein for protein, if you will, transition, which was absolutely fantastic and something that we want to continue seeing. I'm not in contact with those people. I just appreciate them from the sidelines. They grow quinoa for Lundberg, and I always make sure to go and buy Lundberg quinoa because of them.
That's what I do too. And they also have sunflowers in Offiers as well. And I definitely choose Lundberg for that reason, because I'm like, they're right here in my community.
Fantastic. Yes, absolutely. It's very, very rewarding to see things like that.
Can I throw one other?
Please, Jack, go ahead.
It's a birthday cake with a stick of dynamite in it into the conversation.
Yes, please.
So Thanks, Samantha. And by the way, I'm not mad. How can I be mad at other vegan activists?
Oh,
I talk with a lot of Measure J people, and we may disagree about strategies, but we're all on the same page. And it's as you guys know, it's having these conversations. I'm hoping there's a few hundred people listening, if not more, and more after the recording. And I'm appreciative of K-Mud. God bless freaking K-Mud. I was on with you guys when I was doing forest work up in Humboldt County. You're awesome. You know, the KPFA of Humboldt. Or the, I would say KQED, but I have not been able to talk this stuff in KQED. Yeah, so you guys are the real deal, not corporate media. Listener sponsored.
That's
so thank
right.
You, thank you, K-Mud listeners, even the ones who are pissed off at this conversation right now. Free speech, man. So I wanted to do a shout out for something called, I just learned about this 6 months ago, called Yes on IP28. Have you heard of this one up in Oregon? So it's their version of a ballot initiative, which is called Love Cats and Dogs and Horses. And then we go get a hamburger or a cheeseburger and a milkshake and a chicken wing at ip28.org. Do you know that there are exemptions for the animal ag industry? Oregon, yes, on ip28.org, simply says, let's remove those exemptions, which is so simple. It's so simple. Like, just let me take away your guns. Like, what? What? What do you mean?
And that won't happen in Oregon.
I don't need to talk about that. I shouldn't have even said it. Oh my gosh. But the point is, it's a brilliant way for everybody to get up in arms, and it forces this conversation. Like, you can't pass that ordinance. You can't take away those exemptions. The industry will come and calling down. Boy, I'm incredibly healthy. I ran 5 miles today. I'm 64 years old, and I haven't eaten meat since I went vegan 10 years ago. So you don't eat it for health. You certainly don't need it for the environment. And it is just the cruelest abuse and animal holocaust that we wreak on this planet.
So, Jack, I wonder if you can address this thought I had. I have some friends who eat only meat, and they say that they do eat vegetables because the meat eaters ate that vegetable, and then they get that vitamin when they eat the meat that ate the vegetable. Is that doesn't work, right?
Well, I mean, look, I used to eat meat and vegetables and I was healthy. I was one of those people that could eat some of the, not a lot of the junk food. I wasn't doing the supersize me thing of eating fast food all day, every day. But yeah, can you eat meat and be healthy? Sure. That's not the point. There are three major reasons to consider veganism as the only viable option. Health, that may be an issue for you. It wasn't for me. It wasn't my gateway to veganism. The environment, which was my particular gateway. And then ultimately you get to the big one, which is just, it's the one people don't want to face, which is the ethics of it. Why would you kill a gentle, sentient, docile being, which is as gentle as your dog if it's a cow, and more intelligent than your dog if you care about intelligence, which is not the thing I care about most. I care about sentience and compassion for other living beings, the way Buddhists care about, may all beings be at peace, pass the chicken salad. Well, that's a huge contradiction there. So yeah, you can eat meat and be healthy, but you can't be an environmentalist and eat meat, as a famous ex-rancher said.
I like that. Thank you. To anyone who's like, I would never stop eating meat because nothing else tastes the same, I have to say I absolutely prefer corn brand chicken nuggets. I don't know if anyone has tried this. It's fake chicken and it's made of mushrooms and potato starch, and it tastes better than chicken, if you ask me. Our family eats that instead of chicken, and it's still coming from a factory. It still comes in a box. It's not an everyday food, right? If it's processed, it's a sometimes food, and like there's better food, beans and rice. That's staple diet right there. But there are alternatives.
And not just beans and rice, my God, quinoa and lentils,
millet,
potatoes.
Right.
I'm eating more sweet potatoes than I have. I'm like, oh my God, I just have a snack in the middle of the day. I have a broiled sweet potato. It took me 45 minutes in a toaster oven. There's tons of food. So it's not, you know, the stereotype, of course, by the anti-vegans are like, oh, you're eating, you know, lettuce leaves and some sprouts and some quinoa. Well, they wouldn't say quinoa. They wouldn't know how to spell it. But it's just, it's complete nonsense. It, our grandmas had it right. You know, eat your vegetables and then grains and whole grains and brown rice. I eat a lot of whole wheat bread, organic. I'm not worried about the nonsense word for me of gluten. But I know some people are gluten intolerant, but I'd say they're not eating whole grains, not organic. So that's soaked in GMOs, with glyphosate. In any case, I won't focus on the health issue. There's a documentary called Forks Over Knives, which I'd recommend if you think you need to eat meat. And by the way, a list of some of the best films on all three reasons to go vegan are on my website on the vegan page, treespiritproject.com/vegan. And also the Mary Poppins video you opened with, you can see the videos to it, which are really funny and shows how we treat animals while Mary Poppins sings joyously about it.
Yeah, that's great. The video really helps. Yeah, please do, Samantha. And then we do have two calls.
Yay.
Well, this is going to be super quick. Before I went plant-based, almost 10 years ago now, I actually was pre-diabetic. And so I was diagnosed pre-diabetic. I went to the hospital. I had a bunch of issues. My doctor told me basically, go fulfill this prescription at the hospital. You know, there's basically nothing else that we can do. She was really unhelpful when I tried to push for a solution that wasn't taking a medication, because I already have other medications that I legitimately need to take for non-dietary reasons. I wanted to cut it down. And so I took that prescription from her and I never went and cashed it. I went home. I decided that I was going to fix myself the way that I had seen and heard other people fix themselves. And so I went plant-based and I lost almost 170 pounds in 1 year. Yes, it was an incredible transformation. I have not gained the weight back, even though I will be the very, very first person to say that I am a junk food vegan. I don't care if it's processed. I don't care if it's frozen. I don't care where I get it from. When I was losing all of that weight, I did stick exclusively to a whole foods plant-based diet, and I had never felt better. At this point, you know, I work in politics, and we're coming up to an election season. This is not the time for me to be constantly focused on eating salads. That's not what I'm doing. I have had pizza every single night for 3 weeks. But there can be so many different iterations of this diet that it really fits in with people who legitimately don't even care about health at all. And I'm still healthier than I ever was, eating basically the exact same things, except for actually made out of animals. So
thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. I want to make sure we get this caller in. We only have 6 minutes left in our show tonight, so I'm going to pull up the caller. You are on the air. Thanks for calling KMUD.
Okay. Hey, thank you. Hey, I just happen to know the owners of the Reichert Duck Farm in Sonoma County. They were neighbors when I grew up. I'm 62, so I'm just a puppy. Jack, that's for you. Samantha, both of you, thank you so much for this, of course, and K-Mud. But I just wanted you to know that these are really, really hardworking, caring people. And these are the mother and father of the family, and Dawn has passed away, but I just know them as really hardworking, and they produce a really good quality product, and I understand all of the issues. I'm a dry farmer, organic chili farmer, and I understand all this stuff. The more I cut back on meat, the better I feel. I know that. Same with dairy, but you know, we've got a culture that we grew up on, you know, that hard work, you know, family farm kind of thing. But these CAFOs are wrong. We know they're wrong. I mean, it's the chickens in Petaluma, the way they were raised was really bad, too. And, you know, they didn't call it, what was it, Sonoma. It was a Sonoma aroma. Yeah.
Yes.
But that's a byproduct of overproducing. But I think that we need to go a little bit slower, because there's a lot of really good people out there that they don't know that it's better to have veggies and fruits and the wonderful grains, the quinoa. That's Pete Bear's son's raising that quinoa down in south of Fortuna here. And that's all organic. It goes into our local bread. Some of our bread makers use it. And Pete's a Mennonite. He's a really great dude. His whole family is so hardworking. And, you know, and he's an old school dude. He has pigs and he has animals and stuff. You know, we need to take a look, slow down a little bit. But we can't.
So I appreciate, because we're running out of time here, I really appreciate
I'll let you go. I just wanted to let you know it's not always the way the book is. It's got a lot of pages in it. You know, it doesn't.
I totally agree. And we're not demonizing. I'll speak for myself. I'm guessing I speak for Samantha. She seems like a very compassionate person. We're not demonizing
Absolutely.
Ranchers. We
Absolutely.
Understand that they were raised in that culture. I hear the compassion and the gentleness in your voice. And I think we could even sit down and have conversations about it, which is we need to transition out of this. As an
Absolutely.
Activist, my personal philosophy is activists need to speak the whole, hard, bald truth. And that's what pushes the middle, the society, towards the transition. And I don't expect farmers to, you know, suffer and try to, you know, cash out of their business tomorrow and go broke. But as Samantha said, there are programs to help transitions. And it's just acknowledging the truth. Because what happens now is the reverse, which is pushing back and perpetuating lies about, well, we treat them better and such. And it's just nonsense.
Earplugs and everything. Yeah. I'm giving you guys props. You guys are very, very brave and bold. Thank you so much. And K-Mud Radio, you got mud in your ears.
Thanks, caller.
I'm so sorry. Before, if the caller is still on, I'm so sorry, sir. I believe you might have said your name was Rick. Before we let you go, Reithart Duck Farm is actually different than Liberty Duck Farm. So the Reithart family sold what is now called Reithart Duck Farm to another conglomerate many, many years ago, almost 20 years ago. And now the Reithart family themselves operates a duck farm called Liberty Farms. So Reithart Farm is no longer operated by the Reithart family. And I have been to Reithart Farm, and so I'm not talking about Liberty Ducks right now. I have been to Reithart Farm, and there are hundreds of thousands of ducks that spend their entire lives on wire floors without ever touching the grass, without ever touching water. So I do just want to separate for our listeners that Reithart Duck Farm is not owned and operated by Reithart family any longer.
Thank you, Samantha.
Thank you, Samantha. Yeah, we just have a minute left. Can I do a 60-second plug? Thank you.
Please, yes.
I wanted to thank Leah Wilborn, the new farmed animal campaigner for In Defense of Animals, a great organization, for making a comment. I wanted to call out the San Francisco Veg Fest, which is coming up this Sunday, October 20th in Golden Gate Park. It'll be on the event page of my treespiritproject.com website. Another shout out to Oregon's Yes on IP28.org. And I think that's it. Thank you so much for this, in case I don't get to speak again. Really appreciate being on. I hope we do another show on the same topic, and keep at it. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much to both of our guests. I think we do have to cut it off there, and I wish we didn't. We have so much more to talk about. Jack, I'd like to bring you back sometime to talk about the Thule Elk Project and talk more about cattle in the wrong places. Why are there cattle in national parks? This doesn't make sense to me, and I've been fighting it for years.
Wait, I can answer that. We don't have to do a show. The answer? Money. Next question, next topic.
Money.
Money, 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 money. It's all simple.
Thank you so much, everyone. You are listening to KMUD. Garberville 91.1 and HD1, KMUE Eureka 88.1 and HD1, KMUE Eureka 88.1 and HD1, KLAI.